Chapter 31. For this refrain I had waited since its last appearance, with inexpressible horror, which now culminated.
Chips now felt certain in his own mind that the rat would stick to him. The rat, answering his thought, said, "I will like pitch." ... Now, as the rat leaped out of the pot when it had spoken, and made off, Chips began to hope that it wouldn't keep its word. But, a terrible thing happened next day. For, when dinner time came, and the dock bell rang to strike work, he put his rule into the long pocket at the side of his trousers, and there he found a rat, not that rat, but another rat. And in his hat, he found another, and in his pocket handkerchief, another, and in the sleeves of his coat, when he pulled it on to go to dinner, two more. And from that time he found himself so frightfully intimate with all the rats in the yard, that they climbed up his legs, when he was at work, and sat on his tools, while he used them. And they could all speak to one another, and he understood what they said. And they got into his lodging, and into his bed, and into his teapot, and into his beer, and into his boots. And he was going to be married to a corn chandler's daughter. And when he gave her a workbox he had himself made for her, a rat jumped out of it. And when he put his arm round her waist, a rat clung about her. So the marriage was broken off, though the banns were already twice put up, which the parish clerk well remembers. For, as he handed the book to the clergyman for the second time of asking, a large fat rat ran over the leaf.
By this time a special cascade of rats was rolling down my back, and the whole of my small listening person was overrun with them. At intervals ever since, I have been morbidly afraid of my own pocket, lest my exploring hand should find a specimen or two of those vermin in it.
You may believe that all this was very terrible to Chips, but even all this was not the worst. He knew besides what the rats were doing, wherever they were. So, sometimes he would cry aloud, when he was at his club at night, "Oh, keep the rats out of the convict's burying ground. Don't let them do that. ... There's one of them at the cheese downstairs. ... Or, there's two of them smelling at the baby in the garret. ... Or, other things of that sort." At last, he was voted mad, and lost his work in the yard, and could get no other work. But, King George wanted men, so before very long he got pressed for a sailor. And so he was taken off in a boat one evening to his ship, lying at Spithead, ready to sail. And so the first thing he made out in her as he got near her, was the figurehead of the old 74, where he had seen the devil. She was called the Argonaut, and they rowed right under the bowsprit, where the figurehead of the Argonaut, with a sheepskin in his hand and a blue gown on, was looking out to sea. And sitting staring on his forehead, was the rat who could speak, and his exact words were these: "Chips ahoy, old boy. We've pretty well eat them too, and we'll drown the crew, and we'll eat them too." ...
Here I always became exceedingly faint, and would have asked for water, but that I was speechless.
The ship was bound for the Indies, and if you don't know where that is, you ought to it, and angels will never love you.
Here I felt myself an outcast from a future state.
The ship set sail that very night, and she sailed, and sailed, and sailed. Chip's feelings were dreadful. Nothing ever equaled his terrors. No wonder. At last, one day he asked leave to speak to the Admiral. The Admiral gave leave. Chips went down on his knees in the great state cabin. "Your Honor, unless Your Honor, without a moment's loss of time, makes sail for the nearest shore, this is a doomed ship, and her name is the Coffin." ...
Young man, your words are a madman's words.
... Your Honor, no, they are nibbling us away. ...
Your Honor, them dreadful rats.
Dust and hollowness where solid oak ought to be. Rats nibbling a grave for every man on board. Oh, does Your Honor love your lady and your pretty children? ...
Yes, my man, to be sure.
Apostrophe then, for God's sake, make for the nearest shore, for at this present moment the rats are all stopping in their work, and are all looking straight towards you with bare teeth, and are all saying to one another, that you shall never, 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 see your lady and your children more. Apostrophe my poor fellow, you are a case for the doctor. Sentry, take care of this man. Apostrophe apostrophe, so, he was bled, and he was blistered, and he was this and that, for 6 whole days and nights. So, then he again asked leave, to speak to the admiral. The admiral gave leave. He went down on his knees in the great state cabin. Now, admiral, you must die. You took no warning, you must die. The rats are never wrong in their calculations, and they make out that they'll be through at 12 tonight. So, you must die. With me and all the rest. Apostrophe and so at 12 o'clock there was a great leak reported in the ship, and a torrent of water rushed in, and nothing could stop it, and they all went down, every living soul. And what the rats being water rats left of chips, at last floated to shore, and sitting on them was an immense overgrown rat, laughing, that dived when the corpse touched the beach, and never came up. And there was a deal of seaweed on the remains. And if you get 13 bits of seaweed, and dry them, and burn them in the fire, they will go off like in these 13 words as plain can be. A lemon as pips, and a yard as ships, and I have got ships. Apostrophe apostrophe, the same female bard descended, possibly, from those terrible old scalds who seem to have existed for the express purpose of addling the brains of mankind, when they begin to investigate languages made a standing pretense which greatly assisted in forcing me back to a number of hideous places that I would by all means have avoided. This pretense was, that all her ghost stories had occurred to her own relations. Politeness towards a meritorious family, therefore, forbade my doubting them, and they acquired an air of authentication that impaired my digestive powers for life. There was a narrative concerning an unearthly animal foreboding death, which appeared in the open street to a parlor maid who went to fetch the beer for supper. First, as I now recall it, assuming the likeness of a black dog, and gradually rising on its hind legs and swelling into the semblance of some quadruped greatly surpassing a hippopotamus. Which apparition not because I deemed it in the least improbable, but because I felt it to be really too large to bear I feebly endeavored to explain away. But, on Mercy's retorting with wounded dignity, that the parlor maid was her own sister-in-law, I perceived there was no hope, and resigned myself to this zoological phenomenon as one of my many pursuers. There was another narrative describing the apparition of a young woman who came out of a glass case, and haunted another young woman until the other young woman questioned it and elicited, that its bones, Lord, to think of its being so particular about its bones, were buried under the glass case, whereas she required them to be interred, with every undertaking solemnity up to £24.10, in another particular place. This narrative I considered I had a personal interest in disproving, because we had glass cases at home, and how, otherwise, was I to be guaranteed from the intrusion of young women requiring me to bury them up to £24.10, when I had only 2 pence a week? But my remorseless nurse cut the ground from under my tender feet, by informing me that she was the other young woman, and I couldn't say I don't believe you. Apostrophe it was not possible. Such are a few of the uncommercial journeys that I was forced to make, against my will, when I was very young and unreasoning. And really, as to the latter part of them, it is not so very long ago now I come to think of it, that I was asked to undertake them once again, with a steady countenance. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.